Twitter introduces its version of Stories. Chrome gets faster. And is Amazon always the cheapest? What's going on? I'm Rich DeMuro, and this is Rich on Tech, the podcast where I talk about the tech stuff I think you should know about. It's also the place where I answer the questions that you send me. My name, once again, is Rich DeMuro, tech reporter at KTLA Channel 5 in Los Angeles. Hope you are having a fantastic day. So far, so good for me over here. But I will say that this is it. We are deep into the slide into the holidays. And I know this year is a little bit different with the holidays because of, you know, that whole, little pandemic going around the whole world. Yeah, still happening. I still can't believe that when I left my desk at work back on, it was around March 15th or so, I thought I was going to be gone for about 2 weeks. I left my coffee there, coffee creamer, you know, some other assorted things. And I just took the essentials, right? My laptop, whatever. And here we are, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November. About 8 or 9 months later, depending on how you do the math, and I'm sure you can do the math the right way. I just don't feel like doing it the right way right now. But wow. And it's so weird because I don't think this is ending anytime soon. We've got these, the vaccines on the way. But I mean, it's not like an overnight fix just because we have that. So I'm sort of buckled in. I'm assuming my kids are not going back to school until the next school year, which is just wild to think that they will be home for an entire school year. And myself, I'm not sure what's going to happen with me. I've been working from home and I kind of enjoy it, to be honest. I like it. In fact, I was talking about this with my wife last night. My house has become sort of like the best case scenario for a tech set because I have everything I need to shoot my segments. Oh, you need to sit on a couch and watch TV? Okay, we'll go to the living room. Need to go outside, take some pictures? Go outside. Need to get a picture of the Christmas tree? Sure, we got that. Need to be working in the office? Absolutely. Want to be on the exercise bike? Sure. So it's actually kind of worked out pretty well. And the more I think about it, it makes total sense for me as someone who's doing consumer technology for people working from home and, you know, doing just in general, most of the stuff we use at home, it kind of works. So I don't know. I'm thinking maybe I need to build like a real set in here. And that's where I can shoot all my stories going forward. But you do miss being out on the anchor desk on the set for KTLA. That is kind of fun. And I do miss that. So anyway, have to figure out all that. But let me start this week with something that has really been, well, there's two things that are on my mind 24/7 right now. And it's like the dumbest things. But, you know, this is what I think about as a tech person. The first is my speaker setup. And I have talked about this on the show, how, you know, all these new smart speakers are coming out and it's forced me to like reconsider my Sonos system. But now that I look into my Sonos account, it seems that they give you a pretty good discount for having old speakers. So now when I look at that, and I've tried all the new ones. So I've tried the Google Home, grouping those up. After I talked to you on the show last week, Google Home got this big update on the app. I call it the Sonos update, because now you can group speakers on the fly in Google Home just like you can in Sonos. Now, Sonos is still way easier and a little bit more kind of, I don't know what the terminology is, flushed out, whatever. But, it works, but it's not as pretty or as smooth as Sonos. And the Apple stuff is great, but it really bugs me that you have to use Apple Music. Not that I hate Apple Music, but it's just, I like having the flexibility. Like in my Sonos, I've said this before, I had like a bookmark to all the different playlists on various services that I like. So for me, you know, maybe the Christmas station on iHeartRadio is the one I really like and I want to play. And so that was easily bookmarked. Now, yes, you can do all these same things with these smart speakers. It's just a little bit more work. And so anyway, I've been on this hunt. I've been switching out the speakers in different rooms, trying out, you know, what works. But now I feel like I'm going all the way back to Sonos because I'm like, you know what? I'll buy these speakers for a discounted price and it'll take me to kind of like the place I was at. But, you know, just, I don't know. I was drawn in by the allure of all these smart speakers around. But to be honest, they get kind of annoying to have multiple smart speakers because they're all responding when you say those magic words. And I don't really need that. Like with my music, yes, calling out playlists and stuff by voice is cool and it's nice to have. But at the end of the day, it's kind of nice to just open the app, group the speakers you want, and press play. So anyway, that's the one thing that's on my mind. The other thing is this whole Google Photos situation. So Google came out with a blog post titled "Updating Google Photos Storage Policy to Build for the Future," which tells you absolutely nothing in the title. And they do that on purpose because, you know, they don't want you to realize that, hey, we're going to start charging you for storage. That should have been like the actual headline they use. But starting June 1st, 2021, any new photos and videos you upload counts towards your free 15 gigabytes that you get with a Google storage account. And anything that you, so it's really complicated. Anything that you put in before June 1st, 2021 on that high quality setting is still going to be stored for free. So even if you have a gazillion pictures in there at high quality as of June 1st, those are all fine. They're like sort of grandfathered in until Google decides to change that. But then any new photos and videos, even in that high quality format, will still count towards your 15 gigs of storage. Now, on the surface, this doesn't really affect me too much because I've been paying the $10 a month for the 2 terabytes of Google storage forever. Forever and ever. And I've always uploaded in high quality, except for all these random big video files that I accrue through my work that I just throw in there in high quality because I don't really care. I just want, like, you know, to remember these things, like, you know, like a trip to, you know, Shanghai that I took a million GoPro videos on. I don't need those in like the best quality. I just kind of want to store them forever, but they're not my personal photo collection, but they're in my personal photo collection, if that makes sense. But I, with my personal photos, I've always, always, always done the original quality, which is always counted against your storage. And so on the surface, it doesn't really affect me, but it affects me in various ways. Number one, I think that this is really lame because Google Photos built their entire business over the fact that people can just put their photos in here. It's free. It's a lifetime of photos and you don't have to worry about it. And yes, I think that many people will be just fine with that 15 gigs. And in fact, Google has like a page that you can check to see like how many years it'll take before you have to pay. And they say for the average person, it'll be 3 years. And yeah, and once you can pay $1.99 a month for 100 gigs. Okay, sure. It's kind of like what Apple's been doing with iCloud forever and ever. But the reality is this is not how this started out. iCloud has always been paid storage, except for the 5 gigs. Google Photos was always free storage if you did that high quality. Now, the thing that really bugs me is that they made all these people lose the quality of their pictures by putting them in high quality so that they can get free storage. And now it's like, oh, that actually doesn't really matter anymore. So, I mean, it does. Those will be stored forever and ever in, you know, for free. But going forward, I assume they're just going to change this high quality to be gone, I guess, because I guess maybe it'll still take less storage. I don't know. But the point is, it just makes things very confusing for consumers. And that's who I cover tech news for. And I don't like it. And now for me personally, it actually, I think, is good for the industry because it kind of puts everyone on the equal playing field. So now let's say you were in Google Photos, even though you're an iPhone person, because you like the idea of free storage. Well, now you might say, now that things aren't free moving forward, that, you know, maybe I'll just go to iCloud and now I can consolidate. And perhaps when, you know, this iCloud, this whole, you know, their iCloud One or whatever they're calling it, their, you know, storage or, you know, their bundle subscription, Apple One, you know, you can perhaps save some money by bundling a whole bunch of stuff through that, including 2 terabytes of storage. That's what I'm looking at. Because with that, it's $30 a month, but you get all this stuff. You get the 2 terabytes of storage, you get Apple Music, you get Apple Fitness when that comes out, you get Apple Arcade, you get the news, which I really like, the Apple, the magazine subscription. I mean, that alone, you know, you add all those things up and you're saving some significant money. So this also requires me downloading my entire Google Photos, uploading it to Apple. I mean, it's a whole big thing, believe me. This is what keeps me up at night. So that's on my mind. I'm sure you are sort of thinking about this stuff as well. But, you know, that's kind of what keeps me up at night. And again, I just don't like when companies change things when they've built their entire business. And in fact, you know, even Dropbox looks viable now because, you know, they don't have the same search functionality. I think Google really wins with the search functionality. That's kind of the big thing there. All right, let's get started with a question. Having a little sip of my tea there. Cody asks, can you help me? Is there an Android app that I can use to look up unidentified phone numbers and cell phone numbers? It seems every app I've tried redirects you to sites like Intellis, Been Verified, or Truthfinder. I hate those sites. All I want to do is find out who's calling, as I'm constantly getting calls. I've tried to call a few back, but then I get a message that the number's not in use, not valid. I'm at a loss. Please help. Thank you. P.S. I love watching you on KTLF. Oh, I like watching you on KTLF5. Okay, I'll give you a little ding for that. Not a ding, but like a ding, ding. If love would have been better, but like, I'll take. Okay, so Google has the solution here. So there's a couple things. Number one, the site that's really good is called whitepages.com. And so whitepages.com is a really good reverse search site. If you have a phone number, you want to pop it in there, just click reverse phone, and it pretty much gets, gets it right like almost all the time. So yeah, I just put my phone number in there and yep, sure enough, it's in there. So there you go. But I'm a low spam risk. That's good. So you pop in a phone number. That's one way of doing it. Now that's just a one-off kind of thing. If you want White Pages, I don't believe they have like an app. Like it's not going to identify you. It's not going to, like, you can download their app to your phone, but it's not going to identify things on the fly. But the thing that will is Google's app, and they have the Google Phone app that they just launched into the Play Store called Phone by Google, Caller ID and Spam Protection Beta. And this used to be only exclusive for like the Pixel phones, but now they've launched it where it works with all phones. And so now you can see who's calling you. So most of the caller ID is for businesses, but that's going to be mostly what you need anyway. But I would start with that. So it's called Phone by Google. Download that. I'll put the link in the show notes. The other thing you can do is, depending on your provider, your cell phone provider, you can get caller ID through them. And usually it's like $3 a month, but that will give you everyone. Like I'm talking, you know, if someone, even if it's a personal line, it will identify it. T-Mobile gives you that for free, but you do have to activate it, I believe. But the rest, AT&T and Verizon, gosh, it's so weird. There's only three now. They will charge you $3 a month, but it might be worth it if you're getting so many calls. It's one of the things that, like, whenever I use a Samsung phone or my Google phone, I love having the caller ID. And on iPhone, it's just like never there. Maybe it is if you have T-Mobile. I don't have that, so I don't really see that. But it's just one of those things. It's so nice to see caller ID on your phone. So, all right, let's talk about Amazon. Are they always the cheapest? I figured this was a good story because it's shopping season. And now this was sent to me from Amazon, so clearly it's a little biased towards them. But, you know, Amazon does have fantastic pricing. But they're not always the best, and they're not always the only shop in town. So this is a report from a website or an organization called Profitero, Pandemic Price Wars, which online retailers are beating competitors on price heading into the holiday season. The study compared prices on 18,400 best-selling items in 21 categories across 14 retailers, including Amazon, Walmart, Target, Chewy, Wayfair, Best Buy, and these are all the online retailers. So we're not talking in-store here. So Amazon was most competitively priced in 18 out of 21. It tied Walmart.com for the lowest online prices for beauty items and Chewy.com for pet items. Target is the least competitively priced, averaging 10% more expensive than Amazon. And I believe that. I've always said that Target does not compete on price. They compete on their experience in the store. And I guess that translates to their website. But to me, Target is just a nice, very pretty shopping experience, or very pleasant, I should say. And so you are going to pay more there compared to Walmart, which some stores are really nice, but others are not as kept up. And so there is a big difference. Whereas you go into Target, it's pretty nice most of the time. Interesting too, specialists don't really get into price wars. So it says that Best Buy was generally 13% more expensive than Amazon in electronics. Wayfair, 37% more expensive in home furniture. Here's some of the exact stuff. So when you look at like appliances, Amazon had the lowest price. The closest were Walmart, Target, and Home Depot. Electronics, lowest price of Amazon. The next closest was Walmart, then Target, then Best Buy. Let's see. Clothes, don't care. Home furnishings. Amazon had the lowest price by about 35% on average. Walmart was a little bit more expensive than Target. Actually, Walmart and Home Depot were about the same. Then Target gets kind of expensive. Let's see. Video games. I mean, just go down the line. The main thing I'm getting, the takeaway from here, is that if you're looking for beauty products, Walmart is just fine compared to Amazon. And pet products, Chewy is just fine compared to Amazon. And let's see, was there anything else? Let's see. Oh, for consumers, buyer beware. Promotional discounts may be mirages. 20% off a product that's priced 50% higher on Amazon or Walmart is no deal. So Amazon and Walmart, basically, it's basically just the bottom line is that like Amazon and Walmart are like the best place to shop, along with Target if you want a slightly improved experience. But do your price checks. I do. I do my price checks. I love that PopCart thing. PopCart, just extension on Google. It's really good at finding the price comparisons at different stores. All right, let's see here. Let's see. What do we want to do next? Sue says, how do I get my iPad and iPhone not to be paired? I haven't used my iPad for a while, and the other day, while I'm charging it, next thing you know, all my pictures were on it, and it was ringing. I'd like to keep these separate. Thanks in advance. We elders miss having the kids around the house to do this stuff. Sue. And Sue spells her name S-I-O-U-X. So the only reason I'm thinking it's Sue is because Sioux City, Iowa, right? Or Sioux Falls, South Dakota is spelled S-I-O-U-X. So I'm guessing it's Sue. So the thing that's happening here is twofold. Number one, you've got handoff turned on, and handoff is what connects your iPad to your iPhone for phone calls. It's a continuity feature, they call it. And so you can just go into your settings and turn off handoff. I believe it's under the phone settings on the iPad or under, gosh, on the iPad, I'm not sure. Let's see. I have to look in my iPad, but it's kind of, you know, I don't want to make this show kind of like the... Let's see. I wonder if you can search for handoff. Oh, handoff. Yeah. Okay. Handoff. Right. That's okay. That's AirPlay. Handoff is under AirPlay and handoff on the iPad. Turn that off. I have mine turned off because I don't need all my stuff coming to the iPad. I'm on the workout bike, and next thing you know, I'm in a Peloton class, and my iPad is ringing. I'm like, I don't need that. If it's ringing, enough things ring. I've got my phone ringing. I've got the Apple Watch ringing. My computer rings. It's so annoying. I don't need handoff on all these things. I get it. It's convenient. It's cool if you need it, but I don't personally need it. I like having my calls go to my phone or my watch, and that's it. The other thing that you had is your iCloud Photos turned on, so you can turn that off under iCloud. Just turn off iCloud Photos, and specifically, you could also turn off the iCloud Photo Stream as well, and or you can leave the stream on and turn the photos off. But those are the two settings that you need to look at. Obviously, do your research and kind of see what that entails, because you may have some photos on your iPad that you took that you want to save in iCloud. But just kind of look and see what the ramifications are of those two things. But those are the two settings that you're looking for. All right. Chrome got a big update this week. It's Chrome 87. And I'm not going to go into like a big thing about Chrome and how great it is. But I love Chrome, but I hate Chrome. And the reason I don't like Chrome is because it is so slow and so like laggy. I could barely do a WordPress post on this thing. So I actually use Safari on my computer to do WordPress posts because it just works. Now, maybe it's because of all these extensions I have, and I really try to pare down my extensions, but I need certain extensions to function. So I'm not sure if it's like an extension thing or if it's just a Chrome thing, but nonetheless, Chrome did get an update this week to Chrome 87. And if you're on a Mac, you can go up at the top. It says Chrome, about Google Chrome, and it will check for an update. That's how I got it. And usually, you know, Chrome will also give you, if you, you know, Chrome doesn't auto update per se unless you close it out. So if you never close it out on your computer, it like really doesn't update. But I don't think. But I guess you can turn on automatic updates. Now I see that as an option. But there's a little, whenever there's an update for Chrome, if you look to the right on your menu bar on Chrome, next to your picture, there'll be like a little arrow pointing up. I think it's in like green. You hit that and that will update Chrome. It's like very silent. It doesn't like give you any indication that there's an update. But if you want to manually update, go to Chrome, About Google Chrome. You'll see it says checking for updates. And if there's an update, you can press update, which is what I did. And I'll be honest, it got a lot better. So according to Google, it says Chrome now prioritizes your active tabs versus everything that's open, which is smart. Can't believe they didn't do that before. It says it reduces CPU by 5 times usage, extends battery life by an hour, 0.25. And then it says Chrome now starts up 25% faster and loads pages up to 7% faster. And on Android, page loads are now instantaneous when you go back or forward, which, yes, that should have always been a thing as well. But anyway, I've noticed there is definitely an improvement in Chrome, so go get the update and be on your merry way. All right, let's see. Next question here. Jonathan, hey, Rich. I'm a senior citizen, so I'm not so good with computers since I didn't grow up with them. I follow a number of people on Instagram and was told I have to have a profile on Instagram in order to do this. Instagram seems to show something for me that deals with yoga, and I would never use that in creating my Instagram site slash profile. How do I delete the yoga one and create something that more closely follows my interests? Thanks for your help. I'm not really sure what you mean by this. And the only thing that I can think of is that when you're looking at the search page, it's showing yoga stuff or yoga related. That's the only thing I can think of. And as far as I know, you can't really change that. So up at the top of mine, it says like Instagram TV, travel, architecture, decor, art, food, style, TV, movies, DIY, music, sports, beauty. I mean, I don't understand what any of those things have to do with what I look at on Instagram. But I will say on Instagram, they do show, and this is something I've noticed on Twitter as well, people complaining, is that they show kind of like what I call the LCD videos, lowest common denominator. And by this, I mean, you know, the dancing girls and, you know, just like these pictures that get a lot of interaction from folks, but it's not necessarily stuff that you're fully interested in. So for me, if I see something I don't like on those pages, you can just press and hold a picture and just say not interested. So that's how you do it. And I think if you do that with a couple of those yoga pictures, that should do it. But I don't know. I think that's what you're talking about. Now, I know that this stuff is supposedly personalized to what you look at on Instagram, but I'm not convinced that's 100%. Correct. I mean, I think some of it is, but I think some of it, they're also sort of seeding and getting, you know, just kind of pumping up some of those accounts and things like that. But anyway, that's what I would do is press and hold on a picture and get rid of it. Otherwise, just don't look at that area. But it's just, I think Instagram's just trying to, you know, give people a way to discover more things. And I think that's what's happening to you. All right, let's move on. Another small story, HBO Max, not going to spend a lot of time on this, but it's available on Fire TV. And the cool thing about that is that that was a major holdout. So HBO Max came out a couple months ago, and it was sorely lacking on Roku and Amazon Fire TV sticks and Fire TV devices. So now it is on Fire TV. You can get it by asking you know who, find HBO Max via your voice remote, or you can just search for HBO Max. And HBO Max is a little confusing, but it is included with your HBO subscription. So if you have HBO, you subscribe to your cable, Hulu, AT&T, DirecTV, you can use that login to log into HBO Max, or you can subscribe separately to HBO Max. It's your choice, but it is available on Fire TV. I found the app on mine. It's there. It's great. They've got that new Wonder Woman movie coming out in I think December 25th is the day, which is so exciting for me. Not that I'll necessarily watch a movie on Christmas Day, but certainly the day after. And it's just really neat that like Wonder Woman 1984 is like a real Hollywood blockbuster movie that is coming straight to HBO Max for free. I mean, according to my account, because it's, you know, something I already pay for. I mean, free by something I subscribe to. But how cool is that? I mean, it's like, that's really great. And I know that's because of the pandemic, but it definitely is a benefit to people here that have been sitting at home for months and months and months and want some new entertainment. So I love that. And there you go. And they'll probably pick up a lot of subscribers that day, by the way. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Derek asks, Rich, can you bypass cell phone activation fees by buying an unlocked phone? You know what? It sort of depends. I remember when I actually switched to T-Mobile a couple years ago for a little bit, and I bought my phone outright, and you know, they charged me full price for it, and they still charged me $40 for activation. I think it was 40, maybe it was 35. I can't remember. But anyway, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, wait, what? For an unlocked phone, I still got to pay this $40 to activate a line? And sure enough, yeah. Now, that was a couple years ago, so I don't know. Maybe that's changed. But if you want to bypass cell phone activation fees, I think in general, if you pop your SIM card into a new phone, like let's say you're on Verizon, you have the iPhone 11, you upgrade to the iPhone 12 by buying it unlocked through the Apple Store. If you just go through and swap your phone out through like putting your SIM card in and just, or I think you have to go through the website to do it and say like, I'm switching my IMEI out or whatever, like this, there's this little code on your phone. I think you would bypass the activation fee because they're not really activating a new line or anything. But I know that they, when you upgrade your phone through your carrier, they do charge an upgrade fee many times. So look, these carriers, they're going to do what they can to preserve their profits. It's kind of funny because, oh, there's no contracts anymore. But guess what? There are contracts because people buy their phones for 24 months or 30 months through the carrier. You're on just a contract for the phone instead of the service. What are you going to use, that AT&T phone without service? No. So it's kind of funny. Back in the day, we used to give you the phone for free. Yes, I worked at a phone place back in the day. We used to give you the phone for free for a penny, and then you'd be on a 24, 36, whatever the contract was. I think it was a year. I think it was a year, 12 months, and you were on a contract. Or maybe it was 24 months, whatever it was. But you would pay, the service was your fee. And that service was so expensive, it would pay for also the phone on the back end. Well, then they made the phones full price, which is funny. We went through that whole shift. And now the service is a little bit cheaper, but you're just paying for the phone now. So it's kind of the same thing. I mean, my bill has been like $200 a month for like as long as I can remember. And it's the same thing, two lines, you know? But anyway. So you can try avoiding it, but you know, call and ask, I guess, and say, hey, if I bring an unlocked phone, will you charge me? All right, Twitter this week introduced something called Fleets. And if you're familiar with the idea of Instagram stories or Snapchat, you already know what a fleet is. And a fleet is just a disappearing fleet. They call it a tweet for a fleeting thought. And Twitter says the reason behind this is because so many people thought that tweeting was uncomfortable because it's public, it's permanent, pressure to rack up likes and retweets. And so they're doing the lower pressure way to help people start talking about what's happening. And fleets, they say, are for sharing momentary thoughts. And when they did their tests of these, they saw people with fleets talk more on Twitter. They disappear after 24 hours. You can, you know, videos, photos, you can actually fleet a tweet. And so if you're on a tweet, you can press the little share button and it says like share and fleet, or it says fleet this tweet, something like that. And you'll also be able to broadcast live on fleets soon. But here's my thought about fleets after using them for a week is that I used it exactly once the first minute it was available. And honestly, I haven't really looked at them at the top of my Twitter timeline because I don't identify Twitter with those kind of things just yet. Now, with all that said, I do think that Twitter is actually the quite perfect social media platform because at this point, it is the most universal platform. It's pretty much open. You've got stories now. You've got a way to go live. You've got a way to share videos, even though they have to be kind of short. You have a way of commenting on other people's stuff. You have a way of retweeting. It kind of checks off all the boxes of a good social network. But the problem is it doesn't have a lot of pickup. Like I don't put a lot of effort into Twitter because that's not really where my following is. And most of my following is on Facebook and Instagram. And that's because I kind of have a consumer following and my mom is not on Twitter. And that's really my audience. And so not just my mom. I mean, that's probably how it was when I started out. But this is a funny story. So when I first started my social media accounts, you know, I had no followers and my mom would comment on everything. And I was so embarrassed that I felt so like embarrassed that it was just my mom commenting on everything. And she'd be like, oh, this was so cute. Just like you were when you were a little baby. Mm-mm-mm. And I'd be like, oh, mom, please. I'm trying to get like random strangers to like my stuff. Stop, you know, cramping my style here. And now my mom doesn't comment on my stuff as much. And now I feel sad. I'm like, oh, my mom doesn't comment. Cause like, you know, Twitter or Facebook and Instagram are smart enough to show you like the people closest to you. They show their comments like kind of first when you look at all your comments. And I don't see my mom's comments as much anymore. So I guess she got the thing because now she feels lost in the crowd. But she'll still comment every once in a while. So that's good. Anyway, I tell lots of stories on this podcast. All right, Lydia. This is a long one. Finally giving up on dud computers and taking a bite of the apple. Not a techie, but would like to check emails and do searches several times a day, and recently have had to do work-related tasks online, even when supposedly off-duty. Ooh, that sounds like something you want to discuss with your employer. I have an iPad, but I've only played with and haven't gotten the hang of it. Don't want to put work on there yet. I bought a MacBook Air about 3 weeks ago. Haven't opened the box. Now the newer model comes out for only $50 more. I don't know what that means. So, should I go to Costco and see if they'll take the unopened one back for the price paid and order the new one? Also, will I be able to transfer the Apple Care plan I paid for but haven't set up to the new model? Enjoy your segments on KTLA5 with a less problematic laptop. I can check your podcasts. Maybe this year I should order your book for my birthday, Christmas, and hope there's a valid section on Apple for Dummies. Thanks, Lydia. Lydia, okay, well, number one, my book, unless you're running the older version of the software for the iPhone, probably wouldn't be as relevant anymore. I did not do the version for iOS 14 for reasons I will not get into right now, but there's still some tips in there that do work. It's just, it's not as specific for the latest version of the operating system. In fact, iOS 14 would have been a perfect operating system to do my book for because so many things changed, but I didn't. Okay. My answer to your question is yes, I would absolutely see if Costco will take back the unopened one. I don't see why they wouldn't. I don't know what the return policy is on computers. I think it's 90 days. Usually it is 90 days. Yes. So I would definitely do that. And, when it comes to the Apple plan, just, you know, you just cancel that. It can't charge you for a plan you haven't set up. So cancel that. And then, get the new one. Get the new MacBook Air with the M1 chip. It is getting rave reviews. I have not tested it, but I'm like wanting to switch out my laptop. I wish they made it in a 16-inch because the MacBook Air 13 sounds like it's just screaming fast. And it's like, whoa, what? And I expected this from Apple. That's what I expected. So yes, go get the new one. MacBook Air, if you are in any way a teacher or related to education, be sure to buy the education edition because you'll get $100 off. Same thing. It's just education pricing. So great question. And yeah, it's kind of bad timing, but you know, this is why I recommend that website. What is it? The buyersguide.macrumors.com. And so before you're going to buy any Apple product, buyersguide.macrumors.com, you look at the product and it will tell you how long it's been since the last one came out and whether you should wait or buy or use caution. And so with the 16-inch MacBook Pro right now, it's saying don't buy. With the iMac, it's saying caution. With the Mac Mini, it says buy now because they just came out with one 10 days ago. And it gives you the day since last release, the average days between releases, and then the recent releases. So it's a really, really fantastic resource. So get on there. All right, Google Pay is trying to become more like Venmo. Now, I just got on Venmo. I was a Venmo hater for many, 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 many years. And it just became a thing where people, you know, at school would be like, oh, can you Venmo the teacher $20? Or can you Venmo a parent $10? Hey, can you Venmo the in-laws $10 for dinner? Whatever. That'd be a cheap dinner. But I held out and I said, no, I use Zelle. No, I'll PayPal you, which by the way is the same company, or I'll Cash App you. And everyone was like, Rich, dude, you're the tech guy. Like, why do you hate Venmo so much? And I said, I'll give you my reasons. Number one, I hate the fact that it has a public record of all the things that you do, which you can change to private, but most people don't. So I do. I did not like the fact that Venmo pulled from my my let's say I had $100 in my account and I need to send someone $50, it would pull it from my debit card and not the account. Well, I realized that that was because I never verified my account with like my, you know, full information. So now I fixed that. I turned off the privacy thing. And honestly, now I am a huge fan of Venmo. Now, I know. Now, I still think that Venmo, I still think at the end of the day, it offers less protections than I'd like to see. Like if something went wrong with Venmo, I'd be curious to see how long it would take to get that solved. Now, in the couple of times that I've emailed Venmo, they have emailed me back like quickly. And so I am impressed with that aspect of customer service. I just feel like at all, if I can use like, and I know I'm not a big credit card person, but when I'm purchasing things online or from a mysterious retailer, I like to use a credit card because it offers a little bit more protection. In general, I don't like to give out my debit card number because that is tied to my bank account. And I'm sure my bank has some, you know, precautions in place to try to keep fraud from happening. And 99% of the time, they keep me from purchasing at Target for some reason. Whenever I use my, I try to be good and use my debit card at Target. And that's like, oh, sorry, fraud alert on your account. Please call us or text us. Did you try to make a purchase for $7.79 of, you know, ibuprofen at Target? I'm like, yes. And you have to like call in and like whatever. Now you don't have to call, you just have to text, but still. And it's like embarrassing because, you know, it's like whatever. So anyway, that never happens with a credit card, by the way. But anyway, so I digress. And yes, I like Venmo and now I'm using it. And I actually think the Venmo credit card that they're coming out with actually looks really good because it seems like a no-brainer kind of way of whatever. Anyway. So I'm all about Venmo now. I'm fine with it. But now Google Pay is trying to become Venmo. The app is totally redesigned and they've got some cool features. It will help you pay people, which is fine. I don't know if we're going to see as much uptake on that because Venmo is kind of like the king there. And it's also free, so there's not really much that differentiates it, except your friend may not have a Google Pay account. Then they've got these offers, which who cares? But here's a cool part. You can connect your bank account or cards to Google Pay, and the app will apply some Google magic to give you trends and insights over time to show you like how much you spend on things. Now, I've never really understood the allure of saying like, oh, last year I spent $1,500 on Starbucks. Like, okay, great. Like, what does that do? So next year I'm going to try to spend $1,400? Like, I don't really get that. Like, to me, I like to try to like day by day, whatever I'm spending, like, try to be mindful of it. So just saying like, oh, you spent, you know, $500 at Best Buy, or that would be a lot less. I mean, a lot more, but anyway, so I don't really understand that, but I do see if they can apply trends and say like, you know, I don't know, but that's one aspect. Let's see what else. The cool thing is that they're going to start a bank account, a new mobile first bank account that's integrated into Google Play. And that I actually do think could be kind of compelling. Because not everyone wants to have a big old bank account anymore. And, you know, as all these people are going towards these like transaction, you know, these app-based transactions, like I kind of see the allure of that because it'll include checking and savings accounts with no monthly fees, no overdraft charges, and no minimum balance requirements. So why not? If you can open it up, that's coming in 2021. So just be aware if Google Pay looks totally different, that's what's going on. If you're on Android, you're probably using Google Pay to like tap to pay. But if not, you're just, you know, you're probably using Venmo. So, yeah, there you have it. All right. David says, last week I saw your piece on TV about the Samsung FE phone. Your glowing review convinced me to purchase it. This phone sucks. It won't save passwords for some websites, such as my car insurance company. And now there's a password that I have to enter to access the phone, even though I have hit cancel many times. I'll not make the mistake again and listen to what you suggest. Oh, David. Well, sorry that this happened to you, but what everything you're describing has nothing to do with the quality of this phone. I mean, let's break it down here. The phone sucks. Okay. Well, you didn't give any basis why, but I guess the two reasons you list after is why you think it sucks. It won't save passwords for some websites. Well, David, you didn't mention what software you're using to save passwords. I mean, there's a million ways you can do this. And Yeah, I mean, even on my password manager, there are some websites that it just doesn't play nice with. I mean, and I've been using it for a couple of years now, and okay, you get over it. You go into the app, you copy, you paste, it's all good. But 99% of the time, it works as advertised. Now there's a password that I have to enter to access the phone. Well, I mean, yeah, that's for your safety, and even though you press cancel a million times, I don't know what that means. But yeah, you should have a password to enter your phone because, you know, do you want people randomly having access to your phone? I don't think so. So if you don't want a password on your phone, number one, try using the fingerprint sensor. That's on there. Otherwise, if you really want your phone to just be unlocked forever, you can go into your security settings and just turn off all locks. And I don't recommend doing that at all, but you can do it. And those two reasons do not make this phone suck. The Samsung FE is a fantastic phone. It's on my list of things that I recommend on my website, richontech.tv. And you can go there and see my richest favorite things. I'm keeping a list for the holidays because, you know, everyone always asks me, hey, what do you recommend this? And the Samsung phone is on there. So I think it's a fantastic device. It's on some great deals for the holidays. Samsung S20 FE is, let's see what the deals are. Yeah, it's really cheap. Like I saw it for like, oh, I can't see the price right now, but it's on sale during the holidays. So anyway, yeah, get it. I think that, $550 in this early Black Friday sale, $550 for a great cell phone. That's a really, really good deal. So sorry, David. All right, Fitbit getting a couple new features. If you have a Fitbit Sense or a Versa 3, which are two newer Fitbits, so probably not many have this yet, but Fitbit's pretty popular. So now they're giving users more way to check their blood oxygen levels, and they're also, the big news is that they're adding Google Assistant and also Bluetooth calling and audible replies for Alexa users. So those are three pretty big things. With the blood oxygen, you had to use... Now, mainly this applies to premium members right now, but you can see your blood oxygen levels while sleeping and your averages in the Fitbit app without using a clock face. And so the other way you have to see your blood oxygen all day is to use their free clock face, blood oxygen clock face, which is kind of weird. But they say they're going to offer 7 new additional clock faces in the app gallery by the end of the year. So I guess that's good because it's going to be free. But right now, the premium members can see it, like, you know, anytime. I don't know. It's kind of weird. The Google Assistant, that's pretty cool. So that's great. And, you know, Google is purchasing this company. They haven't done it just yet, but they are in the process. But, you know, they're jumping the gun and already putting Google Assistant in there. And audible replies for Google Assistant will be in the first half of 2021. But Android users can respond to messages, text messages on the go. And they also have hands-free Bluetooth calls. So if you have a Fitbit Sense or a Versa 3, definitely do that software update. I love when new features hit these things. It's the best feeling ever to know that these software engineers are hard at work bringing us new stuff for free. Let's see. Michael says, hey, Rich, I'm contemplating buying a Google Nest doorbell. Please let me know the pluses and minuses of this device. I trust your judgment, and I look forward to your segment on KTLA every time you have an item to review. Thanks again, Michael. Michael, I probably would not recommend the Google Nest doorbell. Here's my reasoning. Google is notoriously wishy-washy, as I explained with Google Photos, in sort of their attention span. Now, this Google Nest doorbell, I am trying to remember if they've even had a new version of this thing. I'm not even sure this thing has been updated since it came out. Whereas Ring continues every single day to update and hone their stuff. And they're on the doorbell, I think it's 3. Whereas this Nest is great. It works with the Nest stuff if you have all Nest. But honestly, I would just go Ring. This is their entire business. I mean, Ring built their entire business on the video doorbell. You know, they invented it. Jamie Siminoff. I mean, I'll never forget interviewing him when he had this tiny little office in Santa Monica. Show me the Ring doorbell. I mean, he brought me into the little lab he had set up. I mean, this guy is like, and I've said this before, he reminds me of like Doc Brown in Back to the Future, right? He's got this little lab and he tinkers and that's his job. Now he's like a multi, you know, probably billionaire, if not, probably multimillionaire. That is probably spending his time dealing with all the ins and outs of, the acquiring of Amazon, but he's still, a very hands-on guy. And one time I went to the office and he's sitting there. He's like, oh, Rich, he's like, we had a meeting and he's like, hey, you want to come in on this meeting? And he brings me into this meeting that he's having with another startup. And he's like, You're good at this stuff. Come on, just sit in this meeting. The guy who's there for that startup was probably like, who's this kid sitting in on my meeting with you, Jamie? But it was all good. And it's just, that's the kind of guy he is. I mean, he's a really good guy. And so I love the direction that he is bringing to Ring. I think that they are really honed in on products that, make neighborhoods safer and make you feel better. And in fact, I feel like my next move is to kind of move everything to Ring, because right now I've got the doorbell and a couple other little things, but they're really dialed in, whereas Nest, it's kind of all over the place. So, I mean, do you really want to go with a doorbell from a company that's, their main job is search, and, they've got YouTube and they've got all these other things they've got their hand in, and none of it has been as successful as Google search. And so I love Google, but I also love a company that is going to focus on the products that I'm spending a lot of money for. And with the doorbell, I think, if you're talking about their Nest audio stuff, sure. Doorbell, I'm sure it's fine. I haven't tested it, but I'm sure it's fine. Anyway, that's my answer. Go Ring. All right, Amazon. Let's see. We're getting towards the end of the show here, so I want to make sure I get some things right. This is a quick one, but Amazon opening up a pharmacy, and I think what's cool about this is that it kind of takes all the inefficiencies out of the pharmacy experience. And I don't know about you, but when I have to get medications for my kids or occasionally for myself, you go to here's the process. Your doctor sends it into CVS or Walgreens or whatever. You go there and, they tap on their computer. They look at you for 1 second. They tap for an hour. They look at you again. They tap for another hour. I'll be ready in like, give me an hour. You're like, an hour? Really? They're like, all right, can you do 5 minutes? I'm like, yeah, 5 minutes. Okay. Go shop. 5 minutes. We'll have it ready. So that's number one. It's just this weird, I don't really understand the experience. Then, when it comes to the price, that'll be $174.75. You're like, wait, what? For this little tiny pill or whatever, this one bottle of whatever? It's like, yeah, that's your prescription benefits. Like, okay, well, what about with RX, good RX? They're like, let me type it in. They type in for another hour. And, it's like this on and on. So it's like all these inefficiencies of getting the prescription. And with Amazon, what they're going to do, and I think this is the coolest part, is that they're going to put all the pricing on one page. So they're going to take into account your prescription pricing. They're going to take into account branded and generic versions. They're going to take into account the price without insurance or their new Prime prescription savings, which is kind of like a good RX, but for Amazon customers. And you can see that all on one page. So it might be cheaper to just buy this prescription straight up without your insurance copay. And so, I mean, maybe that happens. I don't know. I feel like that's rare, but you never know. And so I like that idea. Now, this is not going to be good for the time when you need antibiotics like that day. You're still going to have to go to like a pharmacy, but this I think is going to be helpful for long-term medications like, blood thinning drugs or, any sort of like medication that you take regularly for like some sort of chronic issue. That's going to be pretty helpful. And it's definitely worth a shot. All right, do I have time for one more question? Derek says, greetings, Rich. What's the best way to transfer all your info from one phone to another? I upgraded my iPhone yesterday. It gave me two options, phone to phone or iCloud. I picked the first. It seemed to work just fine, but what's the difference between the two options? I didn't have to connect a cord between the two phones, so how did the info just jump from one to the other? Because I didn't choose iCloud. Also, are there pros and cons of setting up a new iPhone through the first or second choice that Apple gives you? Appreciate all you do. Thanks for doing your podcast. I find them interesting and informative. Have a great day. Well, thank you, Derek. Okay, so the two options are phone-to-phone or iCloud, and Apple has made this process really, really easy. I like phone-to-phone because it's getting, the latest information off your phone and basically using Wi-Fi Direct to connect to download that information to your new phone. iCloud is just fine as well. It's just going to take perhaps a little bit longer because what it does is it downloads kind of the data from iCloud. It does like an initial dump of the data to the new phone, And then it does, like, in the background, it'll kind of download everything, like, after a little bit. So, and now it's gotten so smart where even if you choose the iCloud option, Apple will say, hey, do you want to, we noticed that your last phone has been backed up in like a day or two. Do you want us to do a quick iCloud backup before we transfer? And you're like, yeah. But of course, that always takes forever. So it takes longer than they say all the time. But there's no real pros or cons. I mean, I personally like the phone to phone because it's like direct, but you do have to keep both phones nearby and close the whole time. But if it worked, it worked. But yes, to answer your question, it's using some sort of Bluetooth and Wi-Fi to pair and also transfer that data. So that's what I would do. And either one's going to get you the same place, which Apple has sort of... Google's gotten a lot better with the Android devices. In fact, Samsung is pretty darn good of moving your information from device to device and having your home screen set up the same way. On other Android devices, I find it works about half the time. But on Samsung, yeah, pretty much it's going to work. And iPhone, it's always going to work. So you're going to get all the stuff. Your new phone's going to look just like your old phone. All right. One more thing. I'll just talk about this little kerfuffle with Peanuts. So, you know, Peanuts has moved to Apple. They got the rights for like all the Snoopy and Charlie Brown stuff. And so it was announced that the Peanuts specials, like the ones for Halloween, Christmas, and Thanksgiving, were all going to be on Apple TV Plus. Well, of course, people went nuts because this has been on broadcast TV forever and ever. And anyone can watch just by tuning in. Remember when you were a kid, you would just, it'd be one night. One night would be the Charlie Brown special, and you had to be there or you missed it. And now with Apple TV, it got a lot better because you could watch it for like weeks on end if you had Apple TV Plus, which is available on a lot of different devices, not just Apple TV. I know, so confusing. And it's also, to make it even more confusing, you didn't necessarily need a subscription to Apple TV Plus to watch the specials. They made them free to anyone just opening the Apple TV Plus app, but only for a couple days. So it was like a window. So now after this whole big thing got in the media, people, you know, noticed and they got mad and they had petitions. And now these will air on PBS and PBS Kids. And so I guess Apple didn't really want to give the rights over to like, you know, an ABC or a CBS or an NBC or a Fox. So they said, PBS is innocent enough. They don't really compete with us. So we'll do that. So Charlie Brown Thanksgiving will air on PBS. Charlie Brown Christmas will also air on PBS. They'll also stream for free on Apple TV Plus for a long period, but they'll be for subscribers for an even longer period. I'm not going to go through all the dates because I'll put those in the notes, but just know if you have any sort of access to Apple TV Plus, you will be able to watch these specials for free for a certain time period. So it's like, I think it's like 3 or 4 days. But if you're an Apple TV Plus subscriber, you know, you kick it up a notch, you will get more access to these over the holidays. Is that confusing enough? I think it is. Oh my gosh, that's a lot. Oh, there it is. You hear it? Mm-hmm. That's the end of the show. That's going to do it for another episode of the Rich on Tech podcast. If you would like to submit a question for me to answer, just go to richontech.tv, hit the email button at the bottom of the page, or send an email to hello@richontech.tv. You know, I would love it if you would rate and review this podcast to help other people discover it, or like, you know, spam your friends, just like send it to all your friends. Say, hey, you should be listening to this. You can go to ratethispodcast.com/richontech to review it, like my Miko 24 did. Best 30-minute workout ever. Thank you, Rich, for blessing us with tech knowledge and power. Very informative and love his candor. Oh, we switched tenses there. I'm doing a 30-day challenge. Please keep more episode coming and keep, and everyone keep on subscribing with a little smiley face emoji with sunglasses. Well, thank you. Appreciate that. I can't imagine listening to a podcast while I work out, but if it's working for you, hey, you know what? I hope that 30-day challenge is going real well. You can find me online at Rich on Tech everywhere. If you haven't followed me online, especially on Instagram, doing a lot there. It's a lot of work to keep up these socials, but I try. Go to my website, richontech.tv. Find that favorite things list so you can see some stuff for your holiday shopping. My name is Rich DeMuro. Thanks so much for listening. Stay safe. Have a fantastic Thanksgiving holiday. I'll talk to you real soon.